Welcome to the Jacksonville First Seventh-day Adventist Church podcast, where we listen, learn, and love together. Our speaker today is Pastor Jonathan Pinato.
And so, National Sunday Law. So I remember when I was a kid, you know, certain things when you're a child. I don't remember too many things from church when I was a kid, but there are a few things that I do remember, a few things that left an impression on me, and this is one of them. And so I remember we had a church member. I grew up in Houston, and I grew up at a Spanish church, and I had a church member in Houston who was Cuban. And so she had a lot of family, guess where? Here in Florida. Yeah, that's right, here in Florida. So she lived in Houston, but she had a lot of family here in Florida, in Miami. And, you know, I'm talking about this is back in the early 90s, I think. You know, maybe I was 10 or 11 or 12, something like that. And in fact, what was funny is when I first got called to Florida, after not seeing her for like 15, 20 years, I was in Miami and I ran into her, you know, visiting her family at the church, you know, and so that's interesting. Anyways, so I remember when I was a kid, she was Cuban. She had family here in Florida and Miami. And on one of those trips here to Miami, and she visited her family and then she came back to our church in Houston and she shared this testimony. And she said, brothers and sisters, I have just come back from Miami visiting my family. And while I was there in Miami visiting my family, I picked up a copy of the newspaper. I think it was the Miami Herald, I'm not sure. I picked up a copy of the newspaper, and right on the front cover, it said, National Sunday Law has passed. And she says, and immediately I got scared and I got frightened because I said, how did this happen? And I didn't even know, and I'm not even ready for this. And then she began to read the article, and sure enough, I think it was just the paid advertisement. I'm not sure who, you know, paid or who put the advertisement in there, but it just had a few snippets from the book, The Great Controversy, and then it had a 1-800 number for them to call if they were interested in more information about The Great Controversy of the book or something like that. And so, I just remember her testimony, just sharing how earnest she was, realizing that she had been caught unaware, that she wasn't ready, and the thought that the National Sunday Law had passed filled her with fear and with dread. And she shared that testimony about God convicting her that she needed to prepare to get ready for the National Sunday Law. Of course, that was back in the early 90s. And we've heard a lot of rumors since then, but nothing has happened. Just recently, I think it was last November, I remember seeing a YouTube video. Remember what I said about YouTube, right? It's great. There's a lot of resources there, but be careful with the things that you see on YouTube, right? But there was a gentleman there who said, this was back in November of last year, there's a gentleman there who said that in March of 2019, or April of 2019, or the spring of 2019, that the Sunday Law would be enacted. Anybody hear that? You know, and sure enough, where are we? What month is it? Wait a minute, it's May, almost June, and nothing's happened. It seems to be a lot of mystery and a lot of sensationalism surrounding Sunday laws. And so what I want to do this morning is just tackle this issue of the National Sunday Law from a biblical perspective. We're going to first explore why Seventh-day Adventists believe in the National Sunday Law. And then we're also going to do a historical survey of the history of the National Sunday Law here in the United States of America. Are you ready? So that's what we're going to do. We're going to do those two things, a biblical perspective on Sunday laws, and then also a historical perspective of Sunday laws here in the United States of America. And so to begin, I'm going to say three controversial things to grab your attention. All right? Are you ready for them? I'm going to say three controversial things to grab your attention, and then later I'll explain what I mean by them. All right? So are you guys ready? Controversial statement number one that I am making. There's nothing wrong with worshiping God on Sunday. There's nothing wrong with worshiping God on Sunday. Yes, I said it. Number two, controversial thing number two. Am I piquing your interest? I like certain aspects of the Sunday Law. I like certain aspects of the Sunday Law. Number three, are you ready for it? No, don't say anymore, Pastor. All right, number three. Contrary to popular conservative Adventist thought, I do not see a National Sunday Law looming on the horizon at the present moment. Three controversial things I've just said. Nothing wrong with worshiping God on Sunday. I like certain aspects of the Sunday laws, and I do not see a national Sunday law on the horizon. Whew. How many of you guys are ready to walk out? All right, well, don't. Don't. Hold up. Hold on there. All right. Hopefully we can make sense of these things. Seventh-day Adventist and the Mark of the Beast. Seventh-day Adventists have historically viewed the Mark of the Beast of Revelation 13 to be the enforcement of Sunday laws on a national level and even on a global level. That has been our historical position on Sunday laws, that the Mark of the Beast is Sunday sacredness or the enforcement of Sunday sacredness. Now, we're largely a room full of Seventh-day Adventists, and so that doesn't have a problem with us. But if I go to the Baptist church next door and I tell them worshiping God on Sunday is the mark of the beast, how do you think they're going to receive that? Yeah, it's kind of offensive, isn't it? It's kind of offensive. I know it's kind of offensive. All right, so I want to share with you this quotation here from The Great Controversy. And we're going to try to break it down here little by little. This is from The Great Controversy. Notice what it says here in The Great Controversy. Christians of past generations observed Sunday, supposing that in so doing, they were keeping the Bible Sabbath. And there are now, what does she say? What's that word highlighted in red? True. What? Christians. Where? In every church, but not in the Catholic Church, right? Not in the Catholic Church. No, not in the Catholic Church, right? Oh, even in the Catholic Church. Great Controversy? What? True Christians? You mean Adventists aren't the only true Christians around? Adventists aren't the only ones who are going to be saved? Great Controversy. There are now true Christians in every church, including the Roman Catholic Church. All right, let's keep reading. These, who? Who are these? Christians, true Christians in other churches, including Catholics, they honestly believe that Sunday is the Sabbath of divine appointment. And God, He accepts their sincerity of purpose and their integrity before Him. Whew. Wow, so let me come back. Yes, controversial statement number one. There's nothing wrong with worshiping God on Sunday. Just like there's nothing wrong with worshiping God on Monday. There's nothing wrong with worshiping God on Tuesday. I think you guys are following me. Or Wednesday, or Thursday, or Friday. In fact, the Bible tells us that there's angels who worship God every day. They don't stop saying, holy, holy, holy. And I don't want to go on a tangent here about worship. But Lord, you know, we have to come with a spirit of worship. We have to come here with a spirit of worship, not just on Sabbath, but we need to be worshiping God every single day so that we come here on Sabbath. What we do here together is what we've been doing already every single day of the week, is worshiping God. Are you guys following me? It's hard for me to stay on the end. I'm gonna have to preach a sermon on worship. Jason, help me. Yes,
sir. Amen.
All right. There is nothing wrong with worshiping God on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, or Saturday. So what is the problem then? When we tell people that they need to come to church on Saturday, on Sabbath, and not on Sunday, what is the problem? Let me tell you what the problem is. It's not worshiping God on Sunday. The problem is this. When Sunday observance shall be what? Enforced. That's the problem right there. And that's what Revelation 13 tells us is the mark of the beast, because it will compel everyone, rich and small, big and great, to receive a mark on the hand. And if they don't receive that mark on their hand or on their forehead, then they won't be able to buy or sell, and then eventually they'll be put to death. The problem is compulsion. It's that forcing people to worship and to observe the Sabbath. It says, and the world shall be enlightened concerning the obligation of the true Sabbath. The problem with Sunday observance and the problem with Sunday laws is coercion, enforcement, to force everyone, to create economic hardship on other individuals who don't take and don't receive the mark of the beast or who don't follow the Sunday law. And eventually the prosecution of individuals who don't follow Sunday observance and the persecution of those who don't follow the mark of the beast and Sunday worship. That is the problem. Are you guys following me? That is the problem. That intolerance and that hate, and that spirit of intolerance and hate, is something that is evil and something that is beastly. In fact, that's one of the reasons why Revelation uses these terrible beasts to describe governments. Because what the governments are doing is beastly. There is this beast in Revelation 13 that looks like a lamb but speaks like a dragon. That's what's wrong. It looks good on the outside. But when it speaks, its character, everything is about coercion and about force and about persecution. And so we need to be wary of any spirit of compulsion, of any spirit of hate or intolerance. Are you guys following me? And you see a lot of that spirit of hate and intolerance in our world today, don't you? I mean, even the rhetoric within the United States of America is intensifying against certain groups of individuals. If you don't agree with me, then you're a bad person. I mean, and I don't know that I don't necessarily want to expound on that, but you hear it all the time. If you're not of my particular political persuasion, then you are a terrible person. You hear that all the time. We hear it all the time, and it's not what God is calling us to. And as Christians, we should not partake in that spirit of intolerance and hate. It's the same spirit that motivates the beast here in Revelation 13. All right, let's move on, though. Here's another problem with worshiping on Sunday. Whoever shall transgress the command of God to obey a precept which has no higher authority than that of Rome will thereby honor popery above God, all right? So the problem with worshiping on Sunday is that enforcement that the Bible tells us, enforcement, but it's also typically those who go to church on Sunday, they do so because they think that that's the Lord's day, and so how do they treat the Sabbath? They transgress it. They transgress it, and that's the whole point. It's not that they're worshiping on God on Sunday that's wrong. It's the fact that they're transgressing the Sabbath. That's the problem, is transgression of the commandment of God. But mercy, are there Sabbath keepers who also transgress the command of God? Lord have mercy. Isaiah 58 is all about Sabbath keepers who transgress the Sabbath commandment. All right, so here it is. The problem with Sunday laws is not necessarily worshiping God, but it is enforcing it, and it's also transgressing the Sabbath commandment. If you want to worship God on Sabbath, and you want to go to church and worship God on Sunday as well, that's all right, and I know some people do that, and that's all right, and I think you're probably more holier than I am, you know, because I just decided to worship Him one day, right? I just come to church one day, and barely, right? I make it late, and it's just for a couple hours. But there are people, believe it or not, that worship God on Sabbath, and then they worship God on Sunday, and then they're back at church on Wednesday, right? And maybe even in a small group on Tuesday or Thursday night. Their life revolves around church. You know, the Lord bless them for that commitment to church and to worshiping God. All right, let's move on here. That individual who is transgressing the command and still continues to worship on Sunday is honoring popery, it says. He is paying homage to Rome, to the power which enforces the institution ordained by Rome. He is worshiping the beast and his image. This is the third problem that happens with worshiping on Sunday, is that when you know that the seventh day is the Sabbath, and that's what the Bible says, but you continue to worship on Sunday, then what you're doing is you know the truth, but instead of following the truth, you continue to believe a lie, you continue to follow error, and ultimately it says you're paying homage to Rome, because it was the Roman Catholic Church who changed the Sabbath, the seventh-day Sabbath, to Sunday. And so when you decide to continue to, when you know what's right, and you decide to still do something that's not biblical, what you're doing is you're paying homage to Rome. That individual then is worshiping the beast and his image. Does that make sense? All right, and we're going to, in the church, like I said, the Roman Catholic Church makes no bones about their authority to change Scripture. In fact, as Protestants, we believe in this one Latin phrase that Martin Luther made famous. He said, sola scriptura. Have you heard that one there? Sola scriptura, which means the Bible is the last word. The Bible is the final word by the Bible and the Bible only. Everything that we believe should be based on the Bible, right? And then what's interesting is that Roman Catholics in their documents, they have actually written this phrase in their documents, non sola scriptura. In other words, the Roman Catholic Church drives itself not based on just the Bible, but also based on tradition, sacred tradition, and there's a lot of tradition in the Roman Catholic Church, and they also base it on the magisterium, which is the authority of the church to change things and to do things differently. That is the problem here. All right, let's move forward here. And you'll see some, and the Roman Catholic Church makes no bones about it. They'll say it. Yes, we are not guided alone by Scripture. The church also has authority. Sacred tradition also has authority. And they follow those things here. And we're going to see a few quotes later on in my sermon where Protestants also are saying something similar to what the Roman Catholic Church is saying and the prominence of Sunday in their mind. Are you guys following me here? All right, let's keep moving. As men then reject the institution which God has declared to be the sign of his authority, which, what sign is that again? Just make sure you're listening. The Sabbath, that's right, all right, the Sabbath. is a sign of his authority, and honor instead that which Rome has chosen as a token of her supremacy, which is what? Sunday, and that's very clear. They will thereby accept the sign of allegiance to Rome, the mark of the beast. Again, it's about the rejection of truth, and it's an intentional choice against God. It is rebellion. And then she says, and it is not until the issue is thus plainly set before the people, and they are brought to choose between the commandments of God and the commandments of men, that those who continue in transgression will receive the mark of the beast. Great controversy. What is that? Page 449. So do you see that there? Sunday worship is not yet the mark of the beast because we have not yet come to that point in our experience. No one now has the mark of the beast, but it will become a test once the issue is clearly set before the people. And let me tell you something. I'm amazed by how many people who are non-Seventh-day Adventists know that the seventh-day Saturday is the Sabbath. Have you run into them? Yeah, it's incredible how many people know it, and they haven't heard it because of us. It hasn't been because of Adventist proclamation. They just know it. And I sometimes wonder if it's not, you know, what Jesus says, if you be quiet, I will command the stones, right, even to speak. I wonder if we haven't failed in our proclamation, but people are finding out about it. And then they find out about it, and then they just come to our church because we're basically the only ones who worship God on Sabbath. And people even here in our church have come because they've learned about the truth of the Sabbath apart from us. And then they come to our church, and I just pray, Lord, have mercy that we can embrace them, right? And that we can receive them, and that we can welcome them, and that we can show them the blessing that the Sabbath is in our lives. Whew. All right. Biblical evidence now. Why do we believe that Sunday is the mark of the beast? And I'm going to go through this a little bit fast because I assume that you guys already know this. Why do we believe that Sunday is the mark of the beast, and why do we always talk about the seventh-day Sabbath? The biblical evidence begins in Daniel chapter 7. Where it mentions the little horn power that arises from that head of the dragon or the head of that fourth beast, which is the Roman Empire. And so what the Bible is telling us here is that at the fall of the Roman Empire, another power would arise, that little horn. And one of the characteristics of that little horn is that it says it would change the times and the law, or think to change the times and the law. What is the one commandment that deals with both time and law in it? Yeah, the Sabbath commandment, the fourth commandment. And so even in Daniel chapter 7, the Bible is pointing to us the importance of the seventh-day Sabbath. And that defining characteristic of that beast or that power that arose after the Roman Empire fell is that it would change the Sabbath. It would change that. And sure enough, when we look at history, the power that took over was the Holy Roman Empire, or what we know now as the Roman Catholic Church. Evidence number two, in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 and verse 8, the Apostle Paul speaks about the Antichrist power, or the man of sin, and he describes this man of sin as the falling away that would occur. In the Greek, it uses the word apostasia, which is where we get the word apostasy from. In other words, a falling away from truth. And the Apostle Paul says, I even see this, the spirit of Antichrist working even now. The mystery of iniquity, he says, is already at work right now. So let me tell you something here. Do you know when the Christian church started worshiping on Sunday? Do you know what year it was that the Christian church started worshiping on Sunday? The first reference that we have, the first extra-biblical reference that we have to the Christian church worshiping on Sunday was written by Justin Martyr in the year 150 A.D. Now, for perspective here, the Apostle John, which was the last of the apostles to live, and we believe that maybe he died in 90 or 95 or 93 A.D., somewhere around there. He dies, and Justin Martyr comes along, and he writes in 150 A.D. How many years is that? 90, 95 A.D. to 150. How many years is that? Like 55, 60 years? 50 years later, 60 years later, he writes that Christians are now worshiping on the first day of the week, which is called the Lord's Day. And he writes that. Isn't that fast? And not only that, but think about it. If he's writing it at 150, it means they've already been doing it for some time before he actually writes about it. So probably the time was maybe 30 years, after the Apostle John died, that the Christian church already started worshiping on the first day of the week. That's just incredible how fast the early Christian church left biblical truth. And finally, the third reason why we believe that Sunday is the mark of the beast is because in Revelation 14, and I read it for our call to worship, in Revelation 14, it mentions the seal of God, that the servants of God, the 144,000, were sealed with the seal of God on their forehead. And that term there for the seal of God is referenced continually in the Old Testament as a reference to the Sabbath. that it was the Sabbath that was the sign that sealed and identified God's people. And then the first angel, not only that, that comes after that reference of the sealing, the first angel comes and it says, worship God. And then it quotes directly from the Sabbath commandment. Worship him who made thee, the fountains and the waters and the rivers and the streams. And that is a word-for-word quotation from the fourth commandment of Exodus. Isn't that incredible? So, I mean, there's no doubt about what day he's calling us to worship, right? It is on Saturday, the seventh day Sabbath. And it's connected with the seal of God. And then a few verses later, it says, but woe to those who receive the mark of the beast and worship the mark of the beast. Do you see how those two are juxtaposed together? Sabbath and the seal and the first angel worshiping God. And then a few verses later, it warns us, don't worship the beast or receive his mark. And it's a reference to the beast being that entity of Daniel 7, being that entity of the Holy Roman Empire, being that entity of the Roman Catholic Church and its institution and its sign of worship, which is Sunday. Whew. All right, was that clear as mud? But you guys knew this already, right? All right, you guys knew this. You guys at least should know it. And if you want to know a little bit more, maybe we can preach another sermon about that. But that's the biblical reason for why we believe Sunday is the mark of the beast. All right, now if that was clear as mud, let's move on now. A history of Sunday laws now in the United States of America. All right. What I want you to do now is that as we go back into time, I want you to imagine a life that was completely different to today. Can you do that? It's sometimes hard to imagine life different than today, but I want you right now to imagine living in the United States of America in a time that is completely different from today. Can you do that? Right? I mean, I think some of us have a hard time going back to the times before cell phones. Do you guys remember times before cell phones? I mean, what do we do when we needed to contact our spouse and they were out and we needed something urgently, right? What do we do? But then it's too late when they get home, right? You remember when the pagers first came out or beepers, right? I don't even know, right? Even before, it would just beep, right? Do you guys remember how we knew who was calling us? Was it the number of beeps? I don't even remember, right? But you know, it would go off, and then you had to pull the car over, find a payphone, make sure you have quarters, you know, put it in there. I don't know if it was it the number of beeps that you knew, or you only gave your number to one person? I don't know how that worked, right? And then things got fancy, and then the phone number started showing on the pager, right? And then that was, and then we knew that, right? Okay. Imagine life that's totally different from today, right? So as we're going to go back into history, I want you to imagine a time living here in the United States of America completely different to today, all right? And every story I'm going to share with you is a true story. So imagine life different from today. Are you ready? Halt, said the tithing man. I know already you're thinking, what in the world is a tithing man? All right, I'll explain it here in a little bit, all right? Completely different time from today. Halt, said the tithing man. It was Sunday morning in Connecticut. The sun had already risen high above the trees, and a distinguished appearing stranger reined in his horse and turned to face the austere official. This tall traveler was in a hurry to complete his voyage and journey to a town in New York in time to attend church. Again, what day is it? It's Sunday, all right? And this gentleman is riding his horse as fast as he can from Connecticut to New York to attend church, and this tithing man stops. This gentleman riding the horse had forgotten about the blue laws, which govern travel on Sunday in the state of Connecticut. Blue laws that govern travel on Sunday in the state of Connecticut. What license do you have to be traveling on the Lord's Day? The tithing man said. I'm on my way to New York to attend church, said the stranger, and I planned to reach the city yesterday, but the journey took longer than I anticipated. After some time of interrogation, it was not until the stranger on horseback promised to go no further than the town intended that the tithing man would permit him to proceed on his journey. Who was this distinguished stranger on horseback who found himself in violation of Sunday blue laws? It was none other than our newly elected president of the United States, George Washington. True story. And who or what is the tithing man? Well, the tithing man back in the 1700s and the 1800s was an elected official chosen in New England to preserve the order in church during divine service and enforce the observance of the Sunday law. And so you'll see pictures of the tithing man. If anybody was sleeping in church, he would come with a little stick and he would prod them to wake up. I was actually thinking, you know, we're in the middle of nominating committee right now. Should we appoint a tithing man here? Who's sleeping here? You know, and grab a little stick to prod them. Lord have mercy. But not only did he have authority in church, he also had authority outside of church. He was an elected official, and he would enforce the observance of the Sabbath in their mind Sunday. All right, in their mind Sunday, right? He was basically the village spy. He was a village snitch. Yes. There are stories of him, of the tithing man. There are stories of him peering through windows. And homes. And he's peering through people's windows, and he's seeing what they're doing inside their house on Sunday. And there's a story where he caught an individual. They were washing their clothes inside their house on Sunday, and he's peering through the window, and he sees them, and he turns them in. He would spy on individuals doing basic chores on their own property and turn them in. And what was the penalty? Do you remember this one? Time in the stocks. Again, remember a time, living in a time completely different from today. If he would catch you, he had the authority to put you in the stocks. So basically, like you see the image there, you would be left like this, hanging for a day, 2 days, 3 days, however long they determined your offense was. He could find you, he could put you in prison, and they could even hang you for violating the Lord's Day, Sunday blue laws. Can you imagine that? Imagine living in a time different from today. Now, I try to make this as big as possible. There was just so many categories that it was hard to put them all on one screen. But can you guys read that? You guys read that? Okay, read that list. I'll give you a few minutes. Read that list and tell me which of those activities is lawful to do on Sabbath, Seventh-day Sabbath. The Seventh-day Adventist, as good Bible-believing, Sabbath-observing, Seventh-day Adventist, which of these activities are good to do on the Sabbath day? You guys tell me. Just, you know, take a read through them. And what do you guys think about that list? Is there any activity there that's okay to do on the Sabbath? Kissing your spouse? No, I just got one person. Is that okay to do on the Sabbath, kissing your spouse? Well, depends on the church you attend, right? You know? Depends on the church you attend. I don't know. All right. Anything else here that's okay to do on the Sabbath day? What is it? Games? Juggling. Is juggling okay to do on the Sabbath? Is meditation on there? Medication. Is it okay to purchase medication on Sabbath? Okay. All right. Where did I pull this list out of? All right. Let me tell you something. I did not pull this list out of some legalist Seventh-day Adventist who listed all the things that is okay and wrong to do on the Sabbath day. No, I did not take. This is not an Adventist list. These are itemized list of crimes that were punishable to do on Sunday. On Sunday. You know, and I was thinking about that. Man, you think Seventh-day Adventists are legalists. Man, these are, you know, people go to church on Sunday, and they say all these things are unlawful to do on Sunday or, in their mind, Sabbath. But at the same time, it makes me wonder, though, about Adventists. Maybe we could learn a thing or two, I don't know, about how we observe the Sabbath. So controversial statement number two, remember what I said? Controversial statement number two was, I like certain aspects of Sunday laws. Well, let me tell you an aspect that I don't like about Sunday laws is that they criminalize non-criminal behavior. People could be fined, people could be put in the stocks, people could be put in prison, even hanged, if they were caught doing some of these things on Sunday. One of my problems with Sunday laws is that they criminalize non-criminal behavior. Now let's look at a few of these and look at their lasting event or their lasting impact. Football. What time does football start on Sundays? 1 o'clock. 1 o'clock, why? Because that is right after church. The lingering effect of Sunday laws. In fact, remember when we did the 5K, do you guys remember that? We planned it for 1 o'clock, and I had no idea, you know, and we actually fell into that same mindset because the YMCA told us started at 1 o'clock so people who can finish up at church and then come and participate. I didn't realize that. All right, football. How about this one here? Let me see here. Oh, yeah, I remember this one here. Where's car shopping? Do you guys see that? Car shopping on Sunday. Now, I remember when I was a kid in Houston, I remember that every time we would drive to church and come back from church, car dealerships were closed on Sunday, right? When we would drive around on the day Sunday, car dealerships were closed on Sunday. Was that here also in Florida? I don't know if that was the case or not. And what's interesting is I went on the internet and I looked, and these dealerships are no longer closed on Sunday anymore. But they were at one time because of Sunday laws. It was unlawful to go car shopping on Sunday. But guess what else was open, though? The mall was open on Sundays. So you can't buy a car on Sunday, but it's okay to go shopping. But the malls, what time did the malls open back in the days on Sundays? Yeah, about 12 o'clock. And then they closed at 6. All right, so church gets out. You go to the mall, buy some clothes. Maybe you buy your clothes for your Sunday evening service. And then they close at 6 so you can get to church on time Sunday evening. In some places, it was okay. So buying a car was not lawful on Sunday, but buying alcohol and tobacco was okay to buy on Sunday. When I preached this sermon last week, someone from the church, they told me, I remember, you know, in Georgia, growing up in Georgia as a kid, and it was actually a county-to-county thing. You know, I was a little kid, but he said people would get in the truck, and they would drive to the next county, and I didn't understand why they were driving to the next county, but they were driving to the next county on Sunday because that county, you could buy alcohol, whereas that county that they lived in, you couldn't. Grocery stores at one time were closed on Sunday. Can you imagine that? But you can buy alcohol and tobacco on Sunday, but you can't go grocery shopping. Does it make sense? Let me tell you this one here. Do you see kissing your spouse? This is a true story. There was a sailor who just returned home from being 3 or 6 months out at sea, and his wife met him at the door, and he went to embrace her, and he kissed her, and it was Sunday. And the tithing man saw it and put him in prison. True story, true story. Imagine living in a time different from ours today. Domestic chores. But now let's focus on this one here. Oh, wait a minute. Where did I put it? Oh, let's focus on this one here. Do you see this one? Let's focus on this one here. Baseball. If you guys see it over here, I've been highlighting it. Let's focus a little bit on baseball right now. These are actual articles from a situation that happened in Nebraska. If you can read some of the headlines there, it says, Sunday baseball regarded as a menace. By who? The Presbyterian Report condemns all Sabbath secular games, and by Sabbath again they meant Sunday. Sunday baseball, reads the other article. Sunday baseball, it results in a riot at Nebraska City. The sheriff attempts to arrest some of the players. On the left hand side, you see it, arrest Sunday ball players. A wave of morality hits Nebraska. And so let me tell you a true story. Are you guys paying attention? Now, this story did not happen in Nebraska. This story happened in Plainfield, New Jersey. Plainfield, New Jersey. A large crowd assembled to watch a baseball game, but certain of the clergy had determined that no more Sunday baseball games should be allowed. Suddenly, the clergyman, accompanied by his deputy sheriff, walked onto the mound, and he said, I have a warrant for your arrest to anyone who plays baseball here today. Baseball.
Oh, no, you're out of here.
No. Oh, I'm going to arrest all of you. At this, the crowd who had gathered to watch the game, they began to hoop and holler. And it got so bad that the crowd rushed the field. And at which point, the sheriff deputy slipped off to the side, and the crowd chased the preacher, the clergyman. They chased him all the way to his house. Can you imagine living in a time like that? That's unheard of today. Unheard of today, but that's what Sunday meant back in those days. Thank you, Byron. Thank you to Javaris, and thank you to Roger. And who was throwing stuff at me? I want names. Where's the tithing man? Give me names. All right. Glad nothing hit me. Whew. What a different world that was. And this is, 1800s. What a different world that was. But Sunday baseball games were actually instrumental in secularizing Sunday blue laws and in loosening their grip over society. Isn't that interesting? Wow. something else was happening, and this is a true story. Perhaps something more serious is that Seventh-day Adventists were being persecuted in the late 1800s through blue laws and through Sunday laws. You see the gentleman, the first three gentlemen, actually everyone in that picture is a Seventh-day Adventist, except the first three gentlemen that are on the ground. Do you see those? Apart from that, everyone up there is a Seventh-day Adventist. This one here, I think they have number one on him over here with a hat on. Well, actually, I think they all have hats on, but number one there, that was the pastor of the congregation, and these were his parishioners. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine myself being taken to jail and maybe some of my elders, maybe some of my parishioners being taken to jail because ultimately we were Seventh-day Adventists? Let me read to you some of their stories here. Mr. Jude Fine, a Seventh-day Adventist from Maryland, he was arrested on the 20th of November, 1892, on the charge of husking his corn on Sunday. On his own property, husking his corn on Sunday. Pastor Rowe, I hope there's no relationship there to Byron, but I'm not sure. Pastor Rowe of the local Methodist church was the accuser. Pastor Rowe was walking by Mr. Jude Fine's house, and Pastor Rowe saw Mr. Jude Fine in his backyard at work on Sunday. The warrant was issued and served later that same day. Just like that. Mr. Howard, another Seventh-day Adventist, he was arrested for taking 2 or 3 minutes to pick up some sticks in the churchyard Sunday morning before breakfast. Mr. Bullen was arrested, another Seventh-day Adventist, for going out to inspect his garden on Sunday morning for no more than 5 minutes. Can you imagine that? Anybody here have a garden? Can you imagine that? I was thinking, Pam, you know, you have a garden. Imagine you go into your backyard, you know, to inspect your garden for 5 minutes here on Sunday, and the tithing man sees you, and they find you, and they arrest you. Even though everywhere else, though, in that village, you could hear the sound of axes chopping firewood. You could hear the sound of individuals bailing out water and doing other kinds of manual labor, but they were not fined. They were not put into jail, but the Seventh-day Adventist was put into jail. Mr. Ford, he was arrested for hauling window sashes from the steamer dock on Sunday to prevent their being destroyed because threats to that effect had been made. In Arkansas, a pastor was arrested on the charges of having been seen painting the back of a church out of sight of all public roads. Can you imagine that? This is real. Imagine living in a time different from today. So controversial statement number two that I said, there's certain aspects of Sunday laws that I like. This is one of the reasons I don't like them. It's because ultimately Sunday laws are used to persecute and to prosecute minorities. And not only that, but they become an economic hardship on wage earners. Something that Seventh-day Adventists, we've had to accommodate ourselves to is that if we've been working on Saturday and then we want to worship God on Sabbath, we go to our employer and we basically tell them, I can't worship on Saturday anymore, but I'm willing to work any other day of the week, right? Sunday, if you need me, I'm willing to go in on work on Sunday. But what Sunday laws do is they prohibit that individual from working on Sunday. So imagine this, you're a Seventh-day Adventist, you don't work on Sabbath because of conviction. So to a certain extent, you're losing money because you're not working on that day. And then because of Sunday laws, you can't work on Sunday either to make up that income. Are you guys following me? It's an economic hardship on wage earners. But those who go to church on Sunday, they can work on Saturday. So it's no problem for them. It's an unfair advantage. Some people even say it's a tax. It's a tax on minorities and on wage earners. Now let's move ahead. During this same time of the 1800s, this was 1888, this is from, does anybody recognize here these pictures where this is from? Oh, what happened to that bottom one? Did it disappear? Oh, bottom. Anyways, take a quick look at it. It may disappear again. Yeah, it disappeared again. All right, it's all right. Does anybody know where that's at? That was the Columbian Expo, 1893, otherwise known as the Chicago World Fair. 1893, and this is the white city that they built there in Chicago for the World Fair. Isn't that incredible? I mean, it's amazing what they did. They did this in 2 years. This statue here that you see here was to rival I think it was 6 stories tall. It was to rival the Statue of Liberty in New York City. It was called the Columbian Expo because 1893 was the 400th year, a year later, 400th year since Christopher Columbus in 1492 had sailed the ocean blue, and so that's why they had this big, great, you know, retention pond to symbolize that the distance between the Atlantic, and there was a fountain here. That's the one that disappeared. It was right here in the middle. It was an incredible fountain of a boat depicting Christopher Columbus on the top. All right, so Sunday became an issue with the opening of the Chicago of the World Fair, and there was a national discussion. Here's the key. There was a national discussion at that time whether the Chicago World Fair should open on Sunday or not. You want to hear what some of the influential Protestant leaders said about Sunday during that time? Here it goes. Dr. W.W.E. Everts. Sunday, what does he say? Sunday is the test of all religions. The Sabbath, and in his mind, the Sabbath is Sunday. The Sabbath is one of the chief bulwarks of Christianity. So we started our sermon saying that Roman Catholics make no bones about the fact that they changed Saturday to Sunday, Sabbath to Sunday, and that that's kind of their sign of their authority. Here, Protestants are saying the exact same thing. Sunday is the test. It's the bottom line. Don't Seventh-day Adventists actually say something similar, right? What would he say about the Seventh-day Sabbath, right? That it's the seal, that it's the sign of our allegiance to God. They're saying, no, Sunday is the test. Sunday is that chief bulwark. Very interesting. There was a national conversation during this time, and some of the leading evangelical Protestant leaders said this: to pass the measure to close the World Fair on Sundays, what will it do? Honor God and preserve the faith of the nation. A national conversation about Sunday, closing, and in this particular case, closing the Chicago World Fair. The nation's faith in God and his laws will be put to the test by the action of its Congress on its subject. Very interesting, and this was a national conversation that was taking place. And sure enough, Congress did pass the law to close the Chicago World Fair on Sunday. One of the evangelical leaders also said, guard the gates, because there was opposition to this. The wage earners were saying, we need to earn a living, and we want to be able to work on Sundays. And so Protestant leaders were saying, no, guard the gates with... Wait, now it's getting serious, right? Now, it's not just about, well, we need to just honor God on Sunday or on Sabbath or on the Lord's Day, but send federal troops if necessary. Show the world that we are a Christian nation. If need be, use military force. Wait a minute, there is that beast that looks like a lamb, but then speaks like a dragon. True stories. This is also something interesting in the discussion of the history of Sunday laws in the United States of America, especially on a national level, having a national conversation, is that it seems that Sunday laws historically have come up for discussion every 50 to 80 years. So the first time it came up on a national level was the year 1815. It was turned down. Congress decided not to accept a national Sunday law, though there are state Sunday laws in almost every state, except for like California or some of the states out west, because they're more progressive and they always rejected Sunday laws. But especially in New England, especially here in the South, Sunday laws are still on the books. But it's the reason they're not enforced is because it's almost unenforceable, right? I mean, did you see how ridiculous that list was? You know, how do you enforce somebody? Okay, you go into a grocery store and you're going in to buy medications, but if you buy a banana at the same time, then you're arrested, right? Or you're fined. Right, it's just ridiculous. It's unenforceable, and that's why they're not being enforced now. But there are Sunday laws on the books of every state. But on a national level, we're talking about a national Sunday law, a national discussion. It comes up every 50 to 80 years. The second time that a Sunday law came up for national discussion, 1829, 1830, it was voted down again by the courts and by Congress. It came up again in 1888 and through 1893, and that's where you see Seventh-day Adventists being persecuted and being arrested because of it. That's when the Chicago World Fair was taking place. Again, a national Sunday law discussion took place then, but to enforce a national Sunday law in the entire country was also turned down. It happened again in 1920, 1930s. The discussion came back up. What's interesting about 1920, 1930s is that there was a lot going on during that time. The Great Depression was going on during that time. Also, do you guys remember, I forget what the amendment is, the no alcohol amendment, is that what they called it? No, the prohibition. Era prohibition was going on at the same time. Very interesting that was all part of the discussion. In fact, Ellen White was in favor of prohibition, but the problem was that those in favor of prohibition were also in favor of Sunday laws. And so she says it's tricky. it's really tricky because it seems like they almost go hand in hand. And then finally, the last time that Sunday laws were discussed on a national level when the Supreme Court of the United States took the issue up was in 1952, and it was a result of people pushing back against the state Sunday laws, the state blue laws, and people were saying this is against the separation of church and state, and I think even the 14th Amendment, but the Supreme Court said, no, Sunday laws are okay, and the reason why they're okay is because they liken Sunday laws to holidays. They liken closing things down on Sunday to holidays, similar to noise ordinances. I mean, how many of you are thankful that there's a noise ordinance, right? That they can't be doing construction with jackhammers next to your house right at midnight. How many of you are thankful for that? Right? You know, we're thankful for noise ordinances, right? You know, from a certain time, you can't make this noise. And so they liken Sunday laws to that as well, to just keep the noise down, keep everything down. And so they passed Sunday laws, not because of a religious basis, because of civil reasons. Also a labor law to help the workers. The workers are being overworked. They need a day of rest to spend time with family. Does that sound familiar? Yeah, right? That's the same argument that's being used today in Europe to promote Sunday laws. It's for the workers. It's to give them rest. And the workers are saying, I will determine when I want to rest or not. You don't have to tell me when to rest. In fact, in 1952, when the Supreme Court upheld the legality of state Sunday blue laws, Pope John the 23rd, known as the Good Pope, he applauded the United States of America and the Supreme Court for upholding state blue laws. Isn't that interesting? So as I look at this trend here, 1815, 1829, 1888, 1920, 1952, do you think we're due for a discussion on a national level for Sunday laws? I think so. The interesting thing, though, about national conversations is that they come and they go. What's been the latest national conversation in the news lately? Abortion? All right, that kind of came up recently. Any other national conversation that we've been having lately? Trade wars, China, right? China's been in the news. Oh, are we going to fix this thing with China? The Mueller report a few weeks back, right? And it was like, that's all you could see was like the Mueller report. You're like, is that the only thing that's going on in the world? No, there's more things, but it's all about the Mueller report. What else? Immigration, that's right. Build that wall, right? National conversations, they come and they go. And according to this, I don't see anything on the horizon right now, but according to this, a discussion on a national level could be somewhere in the works. I'm not sure, but it could be. Now, what's interesting is that there are already Sunday laws that are being implemented in Europe. The Southern Union Religious Liberty Department, they send out a newsletter. I don't know if you guys get it or not, but they sent out a newsletter in January, and they said that there are already Sunday laws in Austria. There are already Sunday laws in Germany. There are already Sunday laws in Poland. Poland was the example that in 2018, they said 2 Sundays out of the month, everything needs to be closed. And they said in 2019, we'll up that to 3 Sundays out of the month, everything will be closed. In 2020, every Sunday, everything will be closed, except for gas stations and pharmacies and things like that. And also except for the Sunday before Easter and then the Sundays leading up to Christmas. Those are the exception. But other than that, every Sunday will be stores will be closed every Sunday. Controversial statement number two, when we went to France these last couple of years, I noticed that on Sunday, it was calm. It was calm. There weren't a lot of cars out in the busy streets of Paris. It was calm. There was restaurants were closed. Stores were closed. All the busyness was just calm. And I was like, hey, this is kind of nice. Controversial statement number two, I like certain aspects of Sunday law. That's the one aspect that I like. But I'm trading this nice calmness for the fact that eventually those Sunday law grow teeth and they begin to serve to persecute and prosecute minorities. I remember, though, when I was, again, going back to the 80s. Man, is the 80s back in? I mean, nostalgia. My mind's just taking me back to the 80s. I remember that on Thanksgiving Day, you would step outside your house and everything was calm. No, not in the 80s. In the 1980s, everything was calm. Big city, Houston, Texas. You couldn't see any cars outside. People were in their homes. Christmas, everything was calm. Everything was quiet. It was like a ghost town out there. Now, however, things have changed. And so again, when I said I like certain aspects of the Sunday law, I like that calmness. But am I going to trade that calmness for potentially other negative things? Now, let me finish this sermon here with this quote here from Ellen White. It's from the book Testimonies to the Church, Volume 9. And she is writing this during the 1800s while Seventh-day Adventists are being persecuted in the late 1880s. And notice what she says here. One does not receive the mark of the beast because he shows that he realizes the wisdom of keeping the peace by refraining from work that gives offense, doing at the same time a work of the highest importance. And so she's writing to those gentlemen who, yes, unfairly as it was, they were picking up those few little sticks, they were going out to their garden, they were painting the back of the church, whatever it was that they were doing, she says, don't do those things because they're going to give offense and you're going to be focused on and prosecuted, persecuted unnecessarily because it's Sunday. You don't receive the mark of the beast because you refrain from doing offensive things. Does that make sense? And now notice what she says here. Maybe this is controversial statement number four. Whenever possible, let religious... Wait a minute, I don't think I read that right. No, I think this... No, let religious services be held on what? Wait a minute, that doesn't sound right. No, that's what she wrote. Whenever possible, in the context of Sunday laws, she said, whenever possible, let religious services be held on Sunday. And then she says, make these meetings intensely interesting. Don't make it boring. Do you guys think church is boring? We try not to. We're working on that, right? But if you're falling asleep, maybe we have some more work to do. Maybe we need to play some more baseball during church. I don't know. What do you say? You guys seemed alive during that, right? No, she says, make these Sunday meetings intensely interesting. Sing genuine revival hymns and speak with power and assurance of the Savior's love. Speak on temperance and on true religious experience. Isn't that some powerful advice there for in the middle of Sunday laws, what to do and what not to do? Because there's nothing wrong with worshiping God on Sunday. There's nothing wrong with having a religious gathering on Sunday. Nothing wrong with that. And so in conclusion, as of now, I don't necessarily see anything, any agenda, any national Sunday law on the horizon, but you never know because these things come and these things go. I don't think Sunday laws will hit us hard all at once. It will probably be subtle, like the holiday version. Things are just closed down. It's nice. You spend time with the family. But little by little, the potential is for them to grow teeth, to have economic fines, arrests, compulsion, and as Revelation 13 says, even death. So I believe we're living in a time of freedom right now. We have been living in a time of freedom for some time. We need to enjoy this time of freedom, and we need to use it properly to prepare spiritually and practically for the end of time. During this time of rest and freedom and peace that we have, we need to be faithful to the Lord. Whether or not it happens in our day, we need to be ready. Let's not be like, wait, was it those the 10 bridesmaids in that parable, Matthew 25. They just all slumbered and slept. Now is not the time to sleep. It's a time of peace. We enjoy it. But we need to continue to be faithful to the Lord. We need to continue to preach the gospel. We need to continue to teach the gospel. We need to continue to disciple those who are receiving the gospel. We need to continue to share the wonderful news of the Sabbath and of the hope in the second coming of Jesus as a solution and to all the problems of this world. And we need to continue to lift our eyes up to heaven. During this time, we need to continue to focus on God, not take our eyes off of Him.
This podcast is brought to you by the Jacksonville First Seventh-day Adventist Church. Connect with us on www.jaxsda.org or on Facebook and YouTube. We look forward to sharing more inspiring messages with you.